Hi, this is Linda Luger, Executive Director of United Way of Southern West Virginia. Thanks for the generous support you provided during the United Way Fall 2004 campaign. Did you know that 99 cents of every dollar donated stays right here in Raleigh, Fayette, Nicholas, and Summers County to help the 20 agencies the United Way supports, including the Red Cross, Girl Scouts, Commission on Aging, Women's Resource Center, Fishes and Loaves, and 15 other nonprofit agencies. Your tax-deductible gift helps the many who are unable to help themselves. Please continue to support the United Way of Southern West Virginia. It's a great investment in our community. If you would like additional information, please contact me at 253-2111. That's the United Way of Southern West Virginia, making a lasting impression on our community.
WWNR Beckley. The opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of News Talk 620 WWNR.
Tonight, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the 20,000 members of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. If you're working in West Virginia, they're working for you. Now, Bob Kincaid.
Hey, good evening. Almost 7 minutes after 7 o'clock on this Wednesday night. It's the prayer meeting edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Your nightly confrontation with the facts. That's what this is. And if you've got facts to share or opinions for that matter, you're welcome to do so. The phone number around hereabouts locally is 252-6200-6200, just like we're AM 620. Add the extra zero. Neat how that works, huh? And outside the local calling area, it's 800-620-9967, which corresponds to WWNR on your telephone keypad. Learn it, know it, use it. We stream live for you every night on the internet at WWNRNewsTalk620.com. And, of course, you can go through that portal to the to my website, headonradio.com. You can email there, or you can email to WWNR@netphase.net. That's your call. Boy, don't we make it easy for you. We certainly do. I think somewhere inside me is buried this person who wants to review restaurants and movies all the time. Unfortunately, as a parent of small children, it's kind of tough to sit around and watch anything other than, you know, kids' fare very often. But I stayed up late last night and watched a movie that I have been looking forward to seeing for a very, very long time. Well, I first saw the trailer for it when I went to see Fahrenheit 9/11. It's a Spanish-language film, and it's called The Motorcycle Diaries. And it's a magnificent film. It's beautiful. The cinematographer was just a genius. The music is gorgeous. The acting is excellent. And the story is real. I highly recommend this film. Because, you know, I think I was emailing with a friend of mine, and I noted, I think we as residents of Los Estados Unidos tend to think of everything south of El Paso as either some cannibal-infested, fetid jungle or a desert wasteland. And we don't realize the beauty that's there in South America, for instance. And this film details a trip by a couple of buddies. It's kind of a road picture. A couple of buddies who set off from Buenos Aires over to Chile, up the Pacific coast of South America, and they wind up in Caracas, Venezuela. And what a magnificent, magnificent film. Funny, plenty of pathos. Like I said, some excellent acting. The song was nominated. I don't did it win? I don't remember. The song The Other Side of the River was nominated for an Academy Award this past time through. Unless you're fluent in Spanish and can turn off the subtitles and get along that way, you're going to want the subtitles. And yeah, subtitles are irritating. But a lot of it is so universal that it almost speaks to you without having to read the subtitles. But again, if you're tired of the typical fare of horror movies and slasher films and big blow-em-up blockbuster hits, and you'd actually like to see some quality movie making, rent or buy The Motorcycle Diaries. This goes on my shelf of honor up there with things like Mate One and another film I'm fond of, Michael Collins. Great comedies like The In-Laws and W.C. Fields as the Bank Dick and Dr. Strangelove, Local Heroes, another. But yeah, I've got a little shelf where my favorite movies go. And that one's definitely going to go there. In fact, I don't know. I may watch it again this evening when I go home. It's just that good. And I don't, you know, I don't think there is. There's no killing. And it just depicts people in such in such noble form. You will do yourself a favor if you watch it. It'll be good for. I want to go tour South America now. You know what? I'll tell you what. It reminded me of. You remember, for those of you who went to see it in the theater, or for that matter, watched it on video. Remember how stunning the scenery was in the Lord of the Rings movies. And, of course, we're sitting here in our little insulated world. We're going, well, damn, that's New Zealand? I want to go to New Zealand. Wait till you see South America. It's just gorgeous, gorgeous. Do yourself a favor. Watch the film. So we've got that. But also I was reminded, did you see some years back Good Will Hunting? There's a monologue in that film where Will is being considered for a job with the National Security Agency. And I saw it reproduced, and it struck such a chord with me. Here he is being courted by the NSA, you know, high-profile job, the good stuff, especially for a poor kid like the Will character. And he says, why shouldn't I work for the NSA? That's a tough one, but I'll give it a shot. Say I'm working at NSA, somebody puts a code on my desk, something nobody else can break, so I take a shot at it, and maybe I break it. And I'm real happy with myself because I did my job well. But maybe that code was the location of some rebel army in North Africa or the Middle East. Once they have that location, they bomb the village where the rebels were hiding, and 1,500 people I never had a problem with get killed. Now the politicians are saying, send in the Marines to secure the area because, you know, they don't give a boop. It won't be their kid over there getting shot, just like it wasn't them when their number was called because they were pulling a tour in the National Guard. It'll be some guy from Southie taking shrapnel in the hindquarters. And he comes home to find that the plant he used to work at got exported to the country he just got back from. And the guy who put the shrapnel in his backside got his old job because he'll work for 15 cents a day and no bathroom breaks. Meanwhile, my buddy from Southie realizes the only reason he was over there was so we could install a government that would sell us oil at a good price. And, of course, the oil companies, pay attention here, okay? This reads like prophecy. And, of course, the oil companies used the skirmish to scare up oil prices so they could turn a quick buck. Cute little ancillary benefit for them, but it ain't helping my buddy at $2.50 a gallon. And naturally, they're taking their sweet time bringing the oil back, and maybe even took the liberty of hiring an alcoholic skipper who likes to drink martinis and play slalom with the icebergs. And it ain't too long till he hits one, spills the oil, and kills all the sea life in the North Atlantic. So my buddy's out of work, and he can't afford to drive, so he's got to walk to the job interviews, which sucks because the shrapnel in his rear end's giving him chronic hemorrhoids. And meanwhile, he's starving because every time he tries to get a bite to eat, the only blue plate special they're serving is North Atlantic scrod with Quaker steak. So what do I think? I'm holding out for something better. Why not just shoot my buddy, take his job, and give it to his sworn enemy, hike up gas prices, bomb a village, club a baby seal, hit the hash pipe, and join the National Guard? I could be elected president. That's supposed to be fiction. Darned if it doesn't sound like truth, huh? It is truth. You know what? You don't care. What are we going to do with these kids, barely more than kids coming back from Iraq, who can't declare bankruptcy, even though their finances have been ruined because they had to go serve in the National Guard in Iraq. And they are going to come back and pay $2.50 a gallon for gasoline, and they are going to come back maimed and wounded. Movies. What is it? Art imitates life. Life imitates art. Carpe diem. God's a fish. What? There's a lot more reality out there than what you're getting from the Bush administration's little press releases and its fake news and its Jimmy Jeff Ganny guts. That's just beautiful. Why not just shoot my buddy, take his job, and give it to his sworn enemy, hike up gas prices, bomb a village, club a baby seal, hit the hash pipe, and join the National Guard? I could be elected president. That's gorgeous and true. Because you remember way back when that movie was made, we didn't know for a fact that George Bush was a big-time dope smoker? Now we do. Funny how it all works out. All right, it's break time. When we come back, your phone calls, more of my thoughts. I don't know. Maybe we'll dance, sing, tell limericks, keep them clean. This is News Talk 620 WWNR. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Three things you get at L&S Toyota. Great prices. Big selection. No hassles. Now here's the specials of the week. L&S Toyota has brand new 2005 Corollas. Over 35 to choose for as low as $13,818, including a $500 factory rebate. Buy a brand new 2005 Camry. Over 25 to choose for as low as $17,585, including a $750 factory rebate. Plus, buy Toyota certified pre-owned vehicles with 3.99 APR financing for 48 months, a 6-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, roadside assistance, and a 160-point quality assurance inspection. The specials of the week at L&S Toyota, 300 Rural Acres Drive in Beckley. 05 Corollas, $13,818. 05 Camry, $17,585. Offers on select models with approved credit. Prices plus tax, tag, and registration fees. Dealer retains rebates and incentives. Example, 2001 Solara, $270 per month for 48 months at 3.99%. Percent financing with zero down. Offer ends 3/31/05.
How tough are you? West Virginia Sports Promotions presents the 26th Annual Southern West Virginia Budweiser Original Tough Man Contest, as seen on TV. This exciting event is being co-sponsored by 84 Lumber, Hometown Subaru, and Charter Media. It's coming April 1st and 2nd to Beckley's Raleigh County Armory. Up to $5,000 in prize money and Tough Man jackets to be awarded. Plus, an opportunity to advance to the World Championships and fight on national TV. No entry fee. Divisions for men and women. To sign up, you must be 18 or older, an area resident, no pro fights, and limited amateur experience. Just tough local guys and gals. If you think you're tough enough, call 1-800-296-3897.
That's 1-800-296-3897.
It's the 26th Annual Southern West Virginia Budweiser Original Tough Man Contest,
as seen on TV.
Coming April 1st and 2nd to Beckley's Raleigh County Armory. Tickets go on sale March 12th. Tough men, tough women, and ring girls, sign up now. Wimps need not apply.
WWNR Beckley.
Back to radio for the rest of us. Head On.
All right, we're back. 20 minutes after 7 o'clock. Let's see. Let's go ahead and go to the phones. Jim's with us. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Hi, Mr. Kincaid.
How you doing?
I tell you, for a man, you sure talk pretty.
Well, thank you very much.
I just want to let you know.
Thank you very much.
You were talking about film earlier, right?
Yes.
Well, listen, there's a film I want to recommend to you. It's called The Night of the Following Day. You ever heard of it?
Yeah, I have. Is that fairly recent?
No. It came out in 66.
Okay.
Sorry, Richard Boone, Marlon Brando, and Rita Moreno.
Okay, that I read. Yeah, I was reading. That's where I remember it from, a Brando biography, autobiography.
I'll guarantee you one thing. That will definitely keep you interested. It certainly will.
Well, have you seen The Motorcycle Diaries yet?
No, I haven't.
Do you can you tolerate having to deal with subtitles?
Oh, yeah.
Then rent it.
Well, I have to do that every day, Bob, when I talk to people around here. What are you talking about?
It's well worth
sorry.
Your time, Jim.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Do you know what it's about?
No.
It's a true story. It's the account of the trip that the young, not yet Che Ernesto Guevara.
Oh, okay.
Took from
a young man.
Yeah, took from Buenos Aires along with his best buddy, riding on a motorcycle through South America, and basically that trip is what turned him into what he later became.
Because of the horrible things he sees in these countries through which they travel.
Oh, right, and there's a scene there's a scene where basically it's like Massey for South America. Hiring peasants to go down and die in the mines—it's amazing. There are so many parallels, and yeah, he sees these people have been dehumanized by the fascists, and
right.
And
he was really a heroic figure.
Yeah, he was. And,
yeah, to me, he was a heroic figure because that's my generation.
And this, and because he was a heroic figure, necessarily we had to kill him.
Yeah, but he was killed in where? Bolivia?
I believe so. Yeah.
And he was a practicing physician, I believe, correct?
Well, if the movie explains it correctly, he was 1 month short of graduating medical school when he took this trip. And he never looked back.
Well, I'll have to see that. I have seen it advertised. And is it playing at the local theater?
No, it's out on video now.
Out on video, so the cable will have it probably on pay per view or whatever.
Yeah, maybe in a few months. I mean, since it was the song was nominated for an Academy Award, it might be a little while longer hitting pay per view.
I'll tell you one film that I always watch for spiritual renewal at least every 4 months is Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Oh, that's a beauty.
I just love it. What a dump. I mean, you can't get much better than when you get those two together.
Oh, it's a beautiful film.
By the way, I found out an interesting thing, a piece of legislative sleight of hand, and this concerns this national ID card bill,
mm-hmm.
one that uses a biometrics.
Right.
Well, you know, I told you they were going to marry that to the appropriations or the supplemental bill.
Yeah, I recall that.
Well, you know, what they do, in order to make that pass, they don't even have to vote on that bill when they're put together. They can put it together after it leaves the House.
You're kidding.
No. I
thought I understood the workings. How does that work?
I don't know. That's just what one of the legislative aides told me on Capitol Hill this afternoon. And she said if they want to strip it out, they do so in committee between the House and Senate.
Oh, yeah, okay. So it would be a one of those conference committees where they reconcile two separate bills from either house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the next thing we know, we've got a national ID card, and nobody had to vote for it. Nobody has to stand up and be held accountable.
That's right. You got it. And they can just do it. I don't know if these are parliamentary tricks or not. They just will absolutely blow your mind.
Oh, I mean,
the stuff that they can do, and
well,
delay,
I mean, you know, go back to HB1.
Oh well, yeah, of course. I mean, that was just a juggernaut that went through there.
Well, Democrats weren't even allowed in on the negotiations over it.
You know, the only hope we have is that is the effort that's being chaired by the other representative from West Virginia.
Yeah, Congressman Mollahan.
Right, and he's on a 5-5 ethics committee, I think.
Right.
and there's some chance maybe of bringing delay to, you know, to heal. I don't know.
You know, the Senate has to have a quorum in order to do, well, the House, too. They both have to have a quorum in order to do business,
the
right?
The required number to do business, right.
I've been wondering lately, and maybe, you know, maybe this is the way that the minority could flex its muscle better than any other means. What if, well, you remember the old slogan from the Vietnam War, what if they gave a war and nobody showed up?
Right.
What if they had a Congress and nobody showed up?
Well,
do you see where I'm going?
Truth, as for the way these people have been working and what they've been doing, they are fast approaching the status of the Forbidden City of 1900 in Beijing, China.
Oh, I know.
Play with no audience.
I just wonder, though, if the Democrats all of a sudden grew a really, really stiff spine, and every Democrat refused to show up, they wouldn't have a quorum. The Republicans couldn't do their dirty business, could they?
I'm sure Tom DeLay would probably have the Capitol Police look at every one of them, probably have them brought in leg irons and shackles.
Well, that's what he did with
Texas.
Yeah, that's what he did with the Texas Democrats. But I would almost be inspired if I saw the Democrats stand up and do something like that. Because,
well, they're going to have to do something because this can't continue the way it is. And, you know, the American people, you know, it's like I said before, you can fool some of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. And, you know, this business about, for example, you were talking about the price of gasoline and the huge profits that these people are making. And, you know, the thing about it is the reason that they can do this is because, one, we haven't built a refinery in over 20 years in this country.
Well, that's the environmentalist's fault, though, Jim, remember.
Right.
There's no greed involved with that.
But, I mean, we haven't built a refinery, and no matter how much oil they give the pig monster that we've become associated to worshiping, you know, it's not going to do any good.
No.
And, you know, what I don't understand is we went the wrong way in the 50s. When we started developing all these interstate systems and all this stuff for motorized traffic, we should have gone the way Europe did and put that money and put those resources into trains, fast trains, bullet trains, things of that nature, public transportation, in a more responsible way of dealing with this, and we wouldn't be dependent on these things. But now, even in spite of the increasing oil prices and gasoline prices, you've got Detroit still pumping these gas guzzlers out.
Oh, yeah.
And people just waiting in line to buy them.
I know. It boggles the mind. And you know, how many of these people will stand there pumping $2.50 gasoline saying, thank God George Bush is in the White House because he's a godly man of peace?
Well, you know, it's like I said last night. I wanted to make a simple sentence. Hare, Hunter, Field.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
And that's just about, you know, really, honest to God. And by the way, if you see that movie, Judgment at Nuremberg, and you will see where the man, I think it was Maximilian Schell, who played the German lawyer.
Right.
Do you know where he gets these things from?
No.
Not from the Nuremberg laws, but from Oliver Wendell Holmes.
Really?
Yes, in dealing with feeble-minded people.
I'll be darned.
That's what he based his defense of Herr Janik on.
Well, I'll be darned.
Yes, sir. Oliver Wendell Holmes.
And that's kind of reminiscent of the line from Patton when he, when George C. Scott yells, Rommel, you magnificent, I read your book.
Oh, yeah, well.
And, of course, Rommel, in turn, had studied our own native son. Well, he'd studied our own native son, Thomas J. Jackson.
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, he simply transferred horses into panzer units and, you know, basically came up with some brilliant ideas on how to use mechanized, you know, artillery and tanks and things like that. You know, he was a great man, a great military man. I don't like the guy he worked for, but
no.
But after
a while, neither did he, you know.
No, they sure didn't, and that was really sad. By the way, I had a nightmare.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was the Morning O'Brien show and Rick Snuffer. They were in the tough band contest.
Yeah.
And Shelley Moore Capito was the ringwalker.
Woohoo! Yeah, well, I was thinking about going out for dinner after the show, Jim, but you put me off it.
Well, I don't mean to put you off your food, but I mean, you know, I woke up and I had to reach for the Xanax bottle.
Oh, without a doubt, you know, and mop the cold sweat off your forehead. Thanks, Jim. We got to roll. Later. Okie doke. Time for our bottom of the hour break. Ugh. Shelley Moore in a swimsuit. That's one of those full body shivers. Okay, news break from Carl Mack, followed by the Workers' Independent News Service. This is Head On. I'm Bob. This is Carl Mack, WWNR News. A Fayette County man has pleaded guilty to running a meth lab from his father's home. High Rex Road of Charlton Heights pleaded guilty to attempting to operate a clandestine lab before Circuit Judge John Hatcher on March 9th. The plea was part of a deal worked out by Rex Road's attorneys and Raleigh County Assistant Prosecutor Dennis Garrison. Garrison was appointed special prosecutor because of an unknown conflict of interest in the Fayette County Prosecutor's Office. State police arrested Rex Road at his Charlton Heights home last April. The home was owned by his father, who was not living there at the time. Rex Road faces between 2 and 10 years prison when he's sentenced on April 11th. A Monday afternoon drug bust in Beckley has left an officer injured. Brandon and Larry Walton of Beckley, Myrone Bean of Columbus, Ohio, and a 14-year-old male were charged with possession with intent to deliver crack cocaine. Brandon Walton was also charged with fleeing a police officer. Police say Walton fled in his black blazer down Fairlawn Avenue when they tried to stop him dealing drugs from the vehicle. He then fled on foot until police caught him. Corporal Jason McDaniel suffered multiple fractures to the hand during a brief struggle with the suspect. Police found about $300 worth of crack cocaine in the vehicle and another $2,000 worth in an apartment on Hager Street. A man already being held in the Central Regional Jail has now been charged with making a bomb threat to the Nicholas County Courthouse Annex last week. Nova Gerald Jr. allegedly made the threat Friday morning during a three-way call from jail to an acquaintance in Jumping Branch and then back to Summersville. During the call, Gerald allegedly said there was a bomb in the courthouse and warned courthouse workers to get out within 45 minutes. No bomb was found. Sergeant J.A. Robinson with the Nicholas County Sheriff's Office says the other person involved in the three-way call will not be charged. Partly cloudy this evening, partly cloudy tonight, mid-20s. For tomorrow, partly cloudy and warmer. Tomorrow's high in the upper 40s to the low 50s. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
United Airlines has underfunded its pension for union ground workers by billions of dollars, and now the federal agency insuring pensions is moving to take over the pension plans. Richard Turk of the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association says the union doesn't like the government takeover of the pension plan, which will cut pensions by more than 20%.
We're kind of outraged by the fact that the government's kind of poked their nose into something that they don't necessarily need to poke their nose into yet. We were in the middle of negotiations, basically, about this issue, and they've kind of taken that away from us, that we can, you know, cooperate with the company and figure out a way to save that plan.
The AMFA and the International Association of Machinists both represent thousands of United Airlines ground workers affected by the government pension takeover. Turk says the AMFA is considering its options for fighting the takeover.
Our negotiators are busy in Chicago right now figuring out what we're going to do, and our legal team's working with them right now.
A rally that is expected to attract more than 1,000 people is being held today in Monterey Bay, California, to show support for hotel workers who had their wages frozen and contributions to their pensions and health benefits eliminated. The rally is part of more than 7 months of demonstrations in front of the Monterey Bay Travel Lodge. The 13 housekeepers, 12 of whom are Latino women, voted for a boycott in November of 2004. previous rallies held by Unite Here have attracted more than 1,000 supporters.
Rashard Tomtas, a Walmart employee who says he was fired for trying to organize a union at a Loveland, Colorado store, is on a hunger strike that he started March 10th. The Polish native and veteran of the 1980s Solidarity Movement there is spending his days on the street outside the Walmart where he used to work as he continues his hunger strike, demanding that Walmart rehire him and recognize his union, the UFCW.
They fired me, but I'm sure because of my spiritual life on that street, 20 hours a day, I feel like I'm actually promoted to something bigger.
Richard says workers at Walmart will form unions.
Walmart has to face the truth that they cannot avoid this.
Tomtas vows not to give up as he presses his hunger strike to open the public's eyes about how Walmart treats its workers.
We see how far I can go, and we see how they change when after 20 or something days of hunger strike, I'm going to slowly dying on the street.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Ever want to work in your pajamas? A new report from Hague Consulting suggests more and more Americans are. The consulting firm estimates 44 million American workers telecommuted in 2004. Keith Hague, founder of the company, says that 1 in 5 Americans stayed home to work last year because increased availability of broadband nationwide has made the option more viable.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
WWNR, Beckley.
Radio for the real majority. Head on.
Welcome back. Oh, about 23 minutes before 8 o'clock. Halfway decent night out there. Great snowstorm that Carl Mack was looking for last night somehow managed never to materialize, thank heaven. Maybe the lion is finally wingle-whipping or wingle-whapping or whatever the lion does when it sleeps tonight. Sure would be nice. Spring's going to get here. Got to have faith. Now, that's not an article of faith. That's a fact. Spring will get here. Maybe we'll talk about the difference between those two in a little bit. Right now, though, we should go back to the phone. The phone number is 252-6200 outside Beckley. It's 800-620-9967. Jeff's with us. Hey, Jeff, you're head on.
Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Thanks for getting to me.
Yeah, no problem.
Are you preempted tonight? You going to 10 or are you quitting about 9:15?
Why would I quit at 9:15?
I heard on there this morning that there was going to be some kind of a basketball game or something.
Oh, no. That's on WTNJ.
Oh, well, they had it. The guy was talking about, he said he was going to be on the air. I guess he's going to be on the air there.
Right.
I was thinking it's going to be on this station.
No. Our sister station, WTNJ, carries all the Mountain State stuff.
You remember a few years ago there was a show on another station, and I can't find it or remember it where I used to live. It was called Out Your Way. You remember that?
No.
It was hilarious.
Really?
Yeah. You just people around here calling in, talking about whatever. And you'd hear people call in, they'd say, I'm over here at so-and-so, and I'm seeing you throw that trash over that hill, and I'm going to be watching you, and I'm going to get you next time.
kind of like a living vent line.
It was just anybody just call in and say what you want to, and sometimes the host would talk a little bit, or he'd just listen, you know. I don't know where that went. I lost that.
Well, I tell you what, you've got a decent AM radio there around where you listen, right? You're not listening on the computer.
I think it's a good one. Well, it's $100 for it. It ought to be good.
Okay, well, if you get a chance after the show's over, from 10 to midnight every night, really, really good program out of Chicago on WGN 720.
720.
Yeah, Milt Rosenberg.
Yeah.
Probably the smartest interviewer I have ever heard.
Really?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not blowing smoke on that. They talk about everything, from world politics to last night. It was space travel.
I'll tell you somebody who I think is just awesome when it comes to debate and politics is Chris Matthews.
He's a little too much of a screamer for me, but
man, he can argue either side. He can play devil's advocate. If there's a Democrat there, he can argue the Republican side. If there's a Republican there, he can argue the Democrat side. I've seen him put people's feet in the fire and not let them out.
Well, you know, you mentioned that idea. Of course, I mean, I have an agenda, and you know, I'm not gonna hide from it. But of the one thing, you know, to be able to take the one side or the other of a debate, Jeff, it used to be that lots of people could do that because we had something in our high schools called debate clubs,
mm-hmm.
or forensic speech.
If you try to get
and that's
debate,
gone now.
If you try to get debate clubs and have high school kids debate politics, well, that'd be the nerd class.
It kind of depends on what kind of a culture you have within the high school. I know that could be the case in some instances, but in a lot of others, the smart kids, the book jocks, are garner a lot of respect.
Well, there was some news in the last day or two. I believe Joe Manchin's going to sign the Lacey laws in the House of the Senate in Charleston.
Yeah, I know. And I can't wait till the law of unintended consequences kicks in on that.
What do you think that would be?
I'm not kidding. They have created a separate class of individual with full rights called the fetus. And it doesn't matter if that fetus is at the blastocyst stage or the embryo stage or, a full-term fetus. They've created a new set of legal rights. And, we got to make West Virginia more business-friendly. I can't wait till the trial lawyers get hold of it and start suing insurance companies on behalf of injured fetuses.
You think that some of the lawyers that gave the Manchin regret that their donations, their campaign donations?
No, I don't think so.
No,
because, again, we go back to what I said last night, Jeff. We had a choice between Joe Manchin and an absolute, unutterable idiot.
Well, I'm not really sure what Monty Warner would have done.
Well, whatever he would have done, it would have been wrong.
He probably couldn't have really been able to do a whole lot with House and Senate Democrats. They'd had to work together and bipartisanship, and that's what we want anyway. I mean, he could have said, well, you put this in there, and I'll sign it, and you put that in there, and we'll sign it. We'll both get a little bit of what we want. Maybe we'd have had some working together.
No, because I get the idea. If you look at all the hell on earth being created over his campaign finance situation, it's a pretty good indicator of what kind of a governor he would have been.
Yeah, Rob Capehart was better. I don't know what happened, really.
Well, I think that I'll tell you what happened.
Capehart's smart.
Yeah, Capehart's a smart guy, and he was also decidedly anti-mountaintop removal.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what happened to Rob Capehart.
What happened?
The state Republican Party chairman happened to Rob Capehart.
Oh, yeah, you're probably right.
You know,
hijacked it, didn't he?
Well, yeah, it's nice to have your brother in the party chairmanship when you're running for governor.
Well, a lot of times, like on the national level, good Democrats or Republicans can't get the nomination for president because the national Democrats or Republicans themselves won't support them, and the people really don't have a chance. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I do. I mean, when George Bush ran for the Republican nomination in 2000, that wasn't a primary series. That was a coronation. It had already been decided before anybody, before anybody got to cast a vote. And they were going to nominate George Bush, or hell wouldn't hold him. You talk about you mentioned the lawyers though a minute ago, Jeff. Did you see the study that came out? The vast majority of West Virginians really, really don't like the idea of getting rid of third-party bad faith.
I don't doubt that.
And
I think there was something only like 162 bad faith cases filed.
128.
Something like that, yeah.
And that's just filed. Maybe one, two actually went all the way through a trial?
Well, I don't know a whole lot about that, and I hate to comment one way or the other on it. Because when I go guessing, I'm usually wrong.
you don't have to know a whole lot about it. All you have to know is that they want to take your rights away.
Well, yeah, I was in a wreck a few years ago, and I know that from the date of my accident to the day, it's just a little old $1,000 truck. $1,000 is what I got for it.
Yeah.
It took them 55 days from the date of my wreck to pay me for my little truck. And I had some money. And I went and bought another truck. But I didn't tell them that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
And for all they knew, I was walking. And I told them I was walking.
And they didn't care.
And they said, well, you go rent a car and we'll pay for it. All right.
Well, Aon, I think, if you look it up on the internet, Aon, A-O-N, insurance company just got busted for fraudulent tactics and paid a big fine.
Listen to this.
You know, they're promising us a cut in our insurance rates, Jeff, and yet they won't put it in writing.
I went to rent a car. They took my name and everything. They said, "All right, credit card." I told them, "Well, I don't have no credit card." And they said, "Well, we don't rent vehicles without credit cards." And I said, "Okay, hey, hold right here." I called the insurance company, the other person. I said, "Give me your credit card number."
Yeah.
They said, "Well, we're not going to do that." And I said, "Well, I don't have a credit card." And they said, "Well, we ain't going to give you a credit card number." And I said, "Well, she didn't ask me for a credit card before she hit me."
Ain't that the truth?
They wouldn't do it. And I said, "Okay."
Well, it...
they would never admit it, but in the end, they were sorry.
Well, you know, the fact is, if this is crippling them, if third party bad faith in West Virginia is crippling them, Jeff, why won't they open their books and prove it?
I understand, but
and the calls that I've made to various and sundry Senate offices, the staff there, I've just asked them, you know, what's comment running, and they said one office told me that they had not had one single call in support of getting rid of the third party bad faith. Not one.
What did they make all the people that were in charge of West Virginia's workers' comp in charge of the new privatized?
Yes, they did. Yeah, they did. I mentioned that a few nights ago. Kind of funny how that works, Greg.
Why would we do that?
It's like giving a new boat
a job. We're going to give you another chance if you can't do better.
Yeah, it's like giving the captain of the Titanic a new boat.
We need to call that piratized too.
Well, I think we're going to find out that it was a less than optimum idea. You know, again, you know, we have been, for the workers' comp mess, Jeff, we have indebted the state of West Virginia to the tune of what, $230 million. And my kids who aren't even anywhere near working.
How old are you going to be when that's paid off?
How old am I going to be?
Yeah. you don't want to think about
72?
It.
72? You know, I've almost developed an idea, Jeff, that we should not create any, and we should not allow people who are going to be dead when the thing's paid off, we shouldn't allow them to vote on financial matters.
Are you going to support the bonding thing on June 25th?
I haven't read it yet, and I'm playing it close to the vest until I have read it.
You don't have no first instinct?
Yeah, I got a first instinct, but it's it sucks.
Yeah, I don't think we ought to. I think we ought to tell them that. No, because man, when they do that, it just, you know, and I've said a lot of times on all the shows, I show this trend, 5-7% in growth of West Virginia state government every year, when our incomes are only going up 3%. And you know where that ends up, Bob, right?
Well, sure. Well, I mean, it's the same thing as we had the Mort Zuckerman editorial that Jim turned us on to last night. What the independent experts, you know, the GAO, the Government Accounting Office, they're saying that in order to get out of the hole that Bush is digging us, Jeff, we are going to have to grow at 10.2% or better in terms of the national economy for the next 40 years.
I'm well aware. I know. I think
that's not going to happen, Jeff.
I think we overspend. I mean, it's unhip to say this, but I think in a way we might be overreacting to the terrorist thing. I mean, and
Well, hallelujah, Jeff. You get the gold star tonight, and I'm not being a smart aleck. You really do. Yeah, we're overreacting to the terrorist threat. We're playing into their hands.
But look, I've seen reports where Bin Laden's game is to bankrupt us.
Sure.
And I'm sure you've seen papers where he boasts that we spend $1 million for every dollar he spends.
Yeah.
You know that, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, did you hear about the town in New Jersey buying 12 garbage trucks with their Homeland Security money?
No.
Yeah, they got caught. They bought 12 garbage trucks, and the city council in Newark, New Jersey, is trying to say, well, if there was a terrorist attack here, this type of garbage truck would help us clean up the mess faster.
Well, you know, at least there's a justification for it. Washington, D.C. had to use its Homeland Security money to throw George Bush a party.
But let me throw this one at you. You know how we always trying to get rid of our food tax? can't find the money.
Mm-hmm.
Valley can't find the money. Nobody can find the money. But when we done the workers' comp thing, see, remember all week long I said that we shouldn't be taking the 20 million. You know, I didn't like it when we was taking the 20 million from the lottery money and 25 from the tobacco settlement, remember?
Yeah.
Well, they decided on a Thursday night that they didn't like that idea either, right?
That's true.
And what happened Friday morning?
They had reached a solution.
What did they do? Remember?
15 million. What is it? 45 million or 15?
See,
yeah.
It was 45.
Yeah, 45 million from the general from general revenue.
The next day, they found $45 million in the general revenue fund for 30 years to take care of that. We've got $45 million to take care of that bill and not a penny to eliminate the food tax.
I know.
You could find that. We could find that $45 million, which in the end is going to be $1.35 billion. We found that in 12 hours, one night, Thursday night when we went to bed, went home at 5 o'clock, 8 o'clock the next week. There, oh, well, here it is. We'll just use it.
I'll be damned. $45 million. Bucks. How do you like that? Yeah.
Ain't that ridiculous?
Hey, Ethel, look what I found.
That's not right.
No, it's not, Jeff. Then. Well, I've seen there's a move afoot, you know, the table gaming bill is, they hope to pass it to allow the racetracks to have, you know, real live, honest-to-goodness table gaming. And I've seen where one member of the House, Patrick Lane out of Kanawha County, Republican, he's already trying to kill it by a flank attack because he says he wants to raise the tax rate on these table games to remove the food tax. But, of course, I mean, that's not going to happen.
Take the food tax off first, and then we'll talk about it.
Well, yeah, for starters. And the second thing is he's never going to vote for the table gaming anyway. This is a means of trying to generate opposition to it.
Do you know really any what idea of what OPEC's total possible capability is?
No, and I don't think anybody else does either, Jeff. That's a fairly closely guarded secret.
Well, they're near it.
Well, have you ever, you've heard Gary and me talk about it from time to time. Have you ever read up on peak oil?
Yeah.
That'll make your hair stand up.
See, I think that, they're allowed, they've come out and said 27 and a half million, and they, plus 55 a barrel, every one of them's cheating. You know, it's never been higher.
There's right.
Never been, every one of them selling all they can under the table. It's close to 29 and a half. At the low 30s is all they got. And see, they don't really want to tell us that because it'll, if they would come out and say that, you know what happens.
Sure.
It rockets.
Oh, absolutely.
But they're close to it. And I don't, you know, there's a lot of factors in play in that. And the facts are we haven't build a gas refinery in 20 years.
No, and meanwhile, the Federal Trade Commission has allowed more oil company mergers probably in the last 20 years than in all the preceding years.
So yeah, I don't understand why they do that.
Yeah, so they allow the companies to merge, and then in order to cut costs, allegedly, the oil company turns around and, you know, they just inherited a refinery because they merged with, you know, Great Big Oil Company of America. And they've shut down more refineries.
We don't allow anybody hardly build one either.
Well, they're pretty sensitive. They're pretty sensitive structures, but.
But we, you know, we import our gas from Canada, and we a lot of our gas. We don't never even. It's gas when it gets here. Not oil.
Well, Jeff, there's an element of watch the birdie-ism involved with this as well. Take a good go and jump on the computer, do a little research. While we're worrying about the Middle Eastern oil,
yeah,
have a look at what's going on in Colombia.
Colombia.
They've got some, too.
Oil?
Yeah. Okay. And oddly enough...
Colombia oil?
Yeah, and that's Colombia, not
yeah.
U-M. But they've got oil reserves, and oddly enough, it's the last right-wing dictatorship left in South America. After all the money we spent through all the, you know, all the years, all the decades, trying to topple governments all over South America because we were scared to death that the commies were going to take a foothold and just ruin everything, all that money, you know, just thrown down a rat hole, because now there is every single government in South America has a leftward bent.
Well, there's all kinds of different ways to look at it, but really, in a way, if you take your 50 cents gas tax off there, your gas is only a dollar and a half or so.
But there's still an element of subsidy to that, too.
If they didn't subsidize it, it'd be a lot more than that.
We'd be paying what Europe pays.
Yeah.
And we'd be in the streets screaming for rapid rail.
We're not going to slow down. We're not going to stop by it. People can't afford it.
Okay. Well, have you ever met a junkie that just says, you know, I'm tired of running heroin up my arm every night. I'm going to stop now. There's no difference, Jeff. We're as addicted to gasoline as any junkie is to heroin.
And as big a country as this is, even if we had a rail service, we would still have to maintain all the roads we have.
Well, you've got to remember what the enabling legislation was for the interstate system. It's the National Military Defense Highway System.
Yes, oh yeah.
That's why every 5 miles there's a one-mile flat straight stretch.
It's places where they can land airplanes. And
right.
Stuff like
that. Exactly.
It's the way our stores and companies and factories and whatever we have here is spread out. Even if we had national rails, you'd still have to have roads for trucks to deliver freight from places. And then, you know, people like us, I mean, if you wanted to ride a public train, what if you're going grocery shopping? You don't carry 7 bags of groceries on a train?
What
if you got to go get a couch or a TV or run to the hardware store? You know?
Well, the couch and the TV, they deliver.
But see, we still have to have trucks and roads.
Yeah, but it's the difference between making a haul of 40 miles and a haul of 10 or 2. I've got a good friend lives in Pittsburgh, lives right on the rapid rail line, and yeah, you go grocery shopping that way.
You grocery?
Yeah. You get on the train, you go to the grocery store, you come back, you get and boom.
But around here, I can't ever see it happen.
Well, go to ApolloAlliance.org and read up on it. It could happen, and boy, would it be good for the economy.
You know, like having trains down on Coal River. Yeah. There's just no way.
Well, it's a matter. Yeah, there is a way. We're America, Jeff. We can do anything we want to. We're the smartest, most hardworking people on earth. But we're being turned into a junky consumer culture that doesn't know how to. You know, we're importing more food now than we're growing for ourselves. That should tell you something, Jeff.
Well, that's not. If we didn't want it to be like that, I don't think it would be. That's one thing I always take heart in. All these import-export things, and China makes $1 billion a day, and this country makes this, and that country makes that. Anytime I think we want to, we can. Take it, just say we're not doing it like that anymore.
But that's the issue, Jeff. The
want to. No, it's going to take the political will. We're going to have to be scared into it. We're not going to do it.
Right, and the only time a junkie goes cold turkey is when the fix is gone.
When the doctor tells him, if you don't quit, you're going to die.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, we got to roll, Jeff.
Thanks.
Enjoy the conversation. Thanks. Okay, a little news from ABC, and then back at it. The phone number is 252-6200. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-9967. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Proud of over 50 years of broadcasting history.
You can depend on us.
News Talk 620, WWNR, Beckley. It's 8 o'clock.
Bart Smith will sneeze. No antibiotics, please.
Antibiotics don't work for cold and flu. Fluids and rest do. Get smart. Know when antibiotics work. Find out more at 1-888-246-2675. The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, CDC, and FDA.
Proud of over 50 years of broadcasting history.
You can depend on us.
News Talk 620, WWNR, Beckley. It's 8 o'clock.
Exciting things are happening at the library. Libraries in 16 counties are teaming up to offer more services, books, and information than ever before. And you can be a part of it. Just stop by your local library for a brand new card and ask about the new Mountain Library Network. Many libraries, one card does it all.
News Talk 620 WWNR, keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here is your forecast from the Weather Channel. Mainly overcast as we look at our part of West Virginia through tonight. 27 the low. Will rebound to a pleasant 42 tomorrow. Look for more clouds and sunshine as we get through St. Patrick's Day. Overnight, 29 into early Friday. That'll become 51 with showers off and on throughout the day. And look for this wet period to persist into the weekend. Weekend highs in the upper 40s and low 50s.
WWNR Beckley.
It's your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
We're back. I'm Bob. This is Head On, 6 minutes after 8 o'clock. And, well, you know, we've been talking a little bit about South America. I mentioned checking into the oil nightmare. Our FOB, Chris, had emailed me something a while back. I don't have it in front of me. But, you know, while we're watching what's going on in Iraq, you do know that we've got troops in Colombia, right? We've got plenty of troops in, well, you know, hundreds, in the hundreds, in Colombia. And, in fact, we are spraying a genetically altered fungus on their farmlands. Because it'll kill, they say it kills coca and marijuana plants. Somehow or another, that seems like, it smells a little like Agent Orange. And it seems a little bit like trying to kill an ant with a sledgehammer. Going back, I mentioned that wonderful movie, Motorcycle Diaries. There was one Welcome to America moment. And I'm certain it smacks of censorship. Because, you know, everything that was said, there was a subtitle for it in English. Except, and you saw the setup for this, they're hiking in the Andes, the two guys were. And they were falling out. I mean, they couldn't breathe, altitude sickness. It was just, boom, you know, fall down on the road. And there is a scene where this local peasant just comes cruising right, you know, like he's walking on flat ground. And a little bit later, there's a scene in, Cusco or Lima, perhaps, where an old Native American woman hands the two guys a leaf. And if you know anything about that culture, you know it's a coca leaf. Because just like virtually everything else on this sweet little blue-green orb hurtling through the universe, stuff is here for a reason. Thousands, literally thousands of years, the natives in South America who live at those incredible altitudes have chewed the coca leaf. Because the coca leaf allows them to process oxygen better. And what was interesting, the censorship moment I was referencing occurred when, and there was dialogue, all those things, blah, 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 talk, 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 you know, and my Spanish isn't good enough to, and it's very colloquial Spanish, too. I couldn't pick it up, but what was interesting is in the exchange where she handed the coca leaf to the two young men, the subtitles quit. There were no subtitles to explain what was going on. Which I found very, very, very interesting. You know, again, we're spraying this noxious fungus or whatever around on the croplands in Colombia. And yet, it's not the coca plant's problem. It is not the coca leaf's problem. Pulled off the tree and chewed, it allows people to exist at those high altitudes. On the other hand, as usual, it's a greed problem. Because I have no idea what is involved in turning a coca leaf into cocaine. But somewhere, I read somewhere along the way, kerosene is involved. I mean, you've just got to process the hell out of that poor little leaf to get the white powder that is later turned into cocaine and crack. And as usual, you know, why is there a problem? Because there's a demand. You know, it's funny how we're all so in love with the free market until the free market starts showing up in things that we don't like. There's a cocaine problem because there is a demand for cocaine. There's a heroin problem because there is a demand for heroin. And as a result of the heroin demand rising, guess what? The heroin production in Afghanistan, you know, free Afghanistan that has those groovy elections, the Afghanistan where we only control Kabul and nothing else, they're producing more heroin in Afghanistan than were produced. The Taliban had substantially cut the production. That's why we gave them $30 million in May of 2001. Yeah, we did that. So pay attention to what's going on in these, you know, what we as elitist, snobbish Americans call the third world. The third world. As if somehow there's a cultural shame in walking to the local market to buy your fresh foodstuffs instead of driving a great big gas-guzzling SUV 20 miles. Pay attention to what's going on in the third world. Pay attention to this. Maybe you heard it earlier today.
President Bush said Wednesday that Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz is his choice to be president of the World Bank. President Bush outlined the reasons he chose Wolfowitz in a news conference Wednesday, calling him a man of good experience.
He's a man of good experience. He helped manage a large organization. He's a skilled diplomat, worked at the State Department in high positions. I know about them high positions. Ambassador to Indonesia, where he did a very good job representing our country.
Do you know what the World Bank is? I'm sure you do. It is a financial institution that is set up to loan money to poor countries, and sometimes it screws up. You remember the Asian bubble that burst a few years ago, and all those formerly booming Asian economies suddenly began to gag and choke? Well, that had to do with the World Bank and the strictures that they set on governments that borrow from them. Paul Wolfowitz is one of the primary architects of this nightmare in Iraq. This nightmare that's cost us more than 1,500 American military lives, 30,000 maimed and wounded, over 100,000 civilian dead. And guess what we're going to do? George wants to put him in charge of the bank that loans money to the poor countries. You know, poor countries like Bolivia, Colombia, Venezuela, Peru, Ecuador, Chile. Do you begin to see a pattern here? Does this make sense to you? Do you understand why this was done? This is where you take one of your best lieutenants, if you're an organized crime family. You take one of your best lieutenants and you move him into a position where he can apply more pressure to your so-called clients. This is the legacy, you know, and as usual with the Bush administration, the more you screw up, the higher you know. Paul Bremer lost $9 billion, got a Presidential Medal of Freedom. Paul Wolfowitz started a war that he can't finish, so he's going to get promoted upward to president of the World Bank so that he can tighten the screws on poor people and make their lives a little bit more of a living hell. You see how this works now? Now, there is one little hitch here, and that is that the European nations have to agree to Wolfowitz's nomination. maybe, just maybe, the poor people of the world can get a break if the European nations will stand up to this bully that some of you people put in the White House and stop this. My God, putting Paul Wolfowitz in charge of the World Bank's like putting Dracula in charge of the blood bank. He's a man of good experience. Oh, brother. We're going to go to the phones here in a moment. Let's take our break, then we'll come back. That way we won't have to deal with any interruptions. This is News Talk 620 WWNR. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Daydreaming about how great it would be if you didn't have to work anymore, and how you could spend your days just playing with your kids and doing the things you want to do. Then you start to wonder how you'd pay for their college, not to mention your retirement. That's when it hits you. What about their college? What about your retirement? And you wonder if you've done a good job of planning and saving for both. Your neighborhood State Farm agents Jerry Gibbons in Somersville, Butch McNeely in Mullins, and Susan Petrankazi in Beaver can do more for you than ever. They can help you with information on life insurance, college savings plans, health insurance, and IRAs. See State Farm agents Jerry Gibbons in Somersville, Butch McNeely in Mullins, or Susan Petrankazi in Beaver, and keep your kids' college and your retirement dreams alive. Providing insurance and financial services.
How tough are you? West Virginia Sports Promotions presents the 26th Annual Southern West Virginia Budweiser Original Tough Man Contest, as seen on TV. This exciting event is being co-sponsored by 84 Lumber, Hometown Subaru, and Charter Media. It's coming April 1st and 2nd to Beckley's Raleigh County Armory. Up to $5,000 in prize money and Tough Man jackets to be awarded, plus an opportunity to advance to the World Championships and fight on national TV. No entry fee. Divisions for men and women. To sign up, you must be 18 or older, an area resident, no pro fights, and limited amateur experience. Just tough local guys and gals. If you think you're tough enough, call 1-800-296-3897. That's 1-800-296-3897. It's the 26th Annual Southern West Virginia Budweiser Original Tough Man Contest, as seen on TV. Coming April 1st and 2nd to Beckley's Raleigh County Armory. Tickets go on sale March 12th. Tough men, tough women, and ring girls, sign up now. Wimps need not apply.
WWNR Beckley.
A guy who's in no rush to be savage. Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. John Kepi just reminded me. I wonder what the final score in the Globetrotters game was tonight. You know, they were up against a really scrappy, tough Washington Generals squad. Oh, let's go back to the phones. 252-6200, outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. One line open if you want to jump in. We've got Patty. Hey, Patty, you're Head On.
Hello, Bob.
How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Oh, I'm getting along, I reckon.
Well, I just wanted to call you and thank you again for those Eagles tickets.
Well, I was wondering if you got to go and if you enjoyed it.
Yes, I did, and it started pouring the snow right after we left. We left kind of early so we could go ahead and eat something before we went and, you know, make sure we got a place to park.
Mm-hmm.
And it started pouring the snow. But when we came out, there was nothing on the roads. It was just barely flurrying, so everything went well that way, you know. But I wasn't going to let that stop me if I had to sleep in my Bronco.
No, heck no. So they put on a good show?
Oh, absolutely.
Now, was it just them, or was there an opening act or anything like that?
No, but I tell you, they had Joe Walsh with them. I didn't know he was going to be with them. So that was an extra little treat. And what they did was they played a lot of Eagle hits, their older stuff. And, mm-hmm. and I don't really, there might have been a couple of newer songs, but, you know, they played a variety, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And then they did some, when Glenn Frey was on his own, mm-hmm. and Don Henley, they did some of their songs. And then, of course, Joe Walsh did a couple of his, so it was really nice. And
did he do Rocky Mountain Way or Life's Been Good So Far?
Yeah, Life's Been Good So Far. And Joe Walsh, absolutely, he is just the funniest man I've ever seen. And you heard about the helmet cam?
No.
You didn't?
No.
Well, in the middle of the show, he puts on this yellow plastic helmet, like he called it a construction worker helmet, and we're like, wonder why he didn't pick coal mining. But anyway, that's what he said, and he was saying there was all kinds of construction workers around here, and I thought, maybe it used to be. But anyway, he points to the middle of it, and he goes, this is my camera. It's a helmet cam. And he said, now I'm going to, at one point, turn this thing on, and he said, I'm going to point it out in the audience, and he said, you're going to look up there on that big screen, and he said, if you're up there, you look up there and see if your nose is bigger than mine. And he said, I'm betting you that nobody's got a nose bigger than mine.
Yeah, he does have a schnoz, doesn't he?
Well, that's what he said, and it was funny. And, you know, he did that and played with the audience with his hat, and, you know, and it was a lot of fun.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it, and I'm glad the station was able to provide those things. I mentioned the other night, a lot of that has to do with the good offices of our program director, Rick Reiser, who decided that little old head-on needed to be able to give away a few concert tickets. So I'm really glad you got
great.
To go.
It was great. And I was really shocked because I said I've always loved the Eagles. I mean, they were an opening act, and I can't even remember if it was for Marshall Tucker or Charlie Daniels or who in Charleston the first time I saw him, which was back in the 70s. And I couldn't believe that this band was so good and you know, wasn't really what you'd call famous yet.
Yeah.
And back then, the tickets were $7 a piece, and it was festival seating, of course.
Right.
And, you know, I didn't know what to think, but I've always loved them, like I said. So then, you know, there was that opening act or backup, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
And but after the first hour, Don Henley said that we're getting a little older, and he said, since we're going to be playing all these songs for all this time, we're going to take a little break. And he said, but before we do, he said, we're going to play one more song. And he said, it's just like the surplus budget already gone.
Oh. Well, yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, Don's not exactly a George Bush fan, you get the idea.
Well, yeah, I did. I said, I hope a lot of people picked up on that, although I don't know.
Did you get a T-shirt or a hat or anything?
Yes, I did. I got a T-shirt.
You got to come away from a concert with you know, a little something
yeah,
to remember about.
Yeah, I'll have to. Yeah.
And, you know, like those $7 tickets of long ago, I remember when the T-shirts were, you know, $5 or $10.
Yeah.
What, yeah. 50 now?
Some of them were 60 and 75. Of course, the one I got was 35.
For a T-shirt.
That was about the cheapest they had.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I didn't see anything under $35. I mean, the hats might have been, but I didn't see any hats. Of course, the first two tables I went by, you know, it was like 20 feet of people before you could get to the table. So, you know, I don't know what they had.
Well, Jeff called in the other night, and he said he gave his tickets to his wife and I think her sister, and said they had a great time and brought him back a hat. So, you know,
they must have had hats.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it, Patty, and I wish I could have gone.
Oh, I wish you could have too.
Of course,
yeah.
I got to be here at night. You know.
Yeah.
When they start doing noon concerts.
Well,
I can go.
Maybe they'll give you more tickets to give away and give you some, too, so you can go over and rock, and then you can broadcast about it.
That'd be fun. That would be fun. Yeah.
I have one other thing I wanted to discuss.
Sure.
The workers' comp thing.
Yeah.
It's still not resolved, my little problem. And there has been another little thing that's happened. I don't know if anything will happen, but I found it quite interesting between three different politicians.
Really?
And you know how they are. Mm-hmm. But I was really shocked, and then I was shocked, and then I was really shocked. So I'll explain that. I wrote a letter to the Register Herald first about my husband and the problem with Accordia, who was, he bought his private insurer for workers' comp. And, of course, the Register Herald left out Accordia and Peabody and put the insurer.
Right.
But I can back up everything I'm saying with paperwork and letters.
Sure.
So I wrote one to the Gazette. And, of course, I had to cut the wording down, so I didn't get Peabody in it, I don't think, but I did get Accordia. But what was interesting was is that my husband got a phone call one day from Nick Rahal's office.
Really?
And it seems that Mr. Rahal had read my letter. And he had one of his aides call, try to locate my husband, because he said he was going to try to help us.
Well, that's good.
So
he's a good guy.
Well, we got a letter from him, and he said, you know, we had to sign this authorization form with his claim and number and everything, you know, giving him authorization to do this legally. So then it was like a day or two later, and Mr. Bird's office calls. And I had emailed him a couple of times before I ever wrote the letter to the Gazette.
Mm-hmm.
But Mr. Bird's office called, and he offered to do the same thing. And so I thought, you know, well, you know, maybe something will get done. And they both asked for the same thing to be filled out and signed.
Right.
Now, what is really interesting is, and I am infuriated, is Jay Rockefeller.
Mm-hmm.
He seems to think that he's barred from helping us.
Barred?
I would like to know who barred him.
Yeah, wouldn't you?
Yes, I would. Very much.
I mean, are you just, are they just ignoring you, or is the office just ignoring you, or they said something to you directly?
Now, he sent a letter. We got it today. And he says, thank you for making me aware of your concern about the third-party pay system for workers' comp claims and the problem your husband's having with this workers' comp claim. While I'm sympathetic to your husband's situation, I'm afraid that the matters raised are ones in which I cannot be of any direct assistance. Third-party payee problems are handled independently by the insurer, and I am barred from interceding in these types of claims. You should discuss this situation with an attorney to determine what, if any, recourse he may have at this point. I don't know what to think. And he's telling me, you know, about the privatization, you know,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, take it up with the representatives in the West Virginia legislature. Well, what does he think I've done?
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, that's just strange, Patty.
I've wrote them all. I mean, what else can I do? Camp out on their doorstep?
That's next.
Well, I'm disappointed in this man.
Well, that is kind of disappointing. I mean, it makes it sound like he's ethically barred or something. And
yeah, and I'm like,
and I don't understand that.
Two guys can do it, and I mean, one's a senator and one is a congressman. How come he can't?
Maybe Patty, because of some committee that he sits on. I don't know. Maybe because he sits on maybe a finance or a banking or an insurance committee that has oversight of that. But that just
maybe
doesn't.
Maybe he has interest in Peabody
or Accordia. now that's
wouldn't surprise me.
No, that would it surprise anyone?
But you know. These other two,
but yeah, that's the, you know, let's focus on the good. Congressman Rahal jumped out there, and so did Senator Byrd, and that is noble and it's admirable, and I hope they're able to get you some relief.
Well, and the other thing is see, you know, I don't understand what's totally going on, and I don't know if I'm the only one, or maybe that's the way this is planned, but you know, they say, well, if I went to the third party, you know, insurer, but does that mean that the state does not oversee the insurer to make sure they follow the rules that the state had to go by?
To a certain extent, Patty, that is what that means. You know, we've been talking a little bit on the show about the elimination of third-party bad faith lawsuits, you know, the
mm-hmm.
The movement. And we've been talking about it mainly in terms of car wrecks.
Mm-hmm.
But this strikes me as another one of those instances.
Well, but another thing that's confusing to me, Bob, is yet, even though they say this, yet when we protest this, it goes before the state workers' comp office of judges.
It absolutely does.
So why can they say the state has nothing to do with it anymore? You know, it's get off the fence. You are or you ain't.
Well, yeah. I tend to agree with you, Patty. That's just a strange situation. I tell you what, I'll nose around and ask a few of my buddies in the know what they think about that and see if I can get an answer. I'll email you.
It's just completely ridiculous. And one other thing, if you got time.
Sure.
I know you weren't streaming last time when I went over my husband's injuries.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just like to run over those right quick.
Well, I tell you what, can you hold for a little bit?
Sure.
And we'll come back out of the break and you can share that. And
okay.
I think that would be a good idea. I'm glad you reminded me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Patty. We'll be with you through the news and come back after the break. This is News Talk 620 WWNR. Tongue tied. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Good evening, this is Carl Mack, WWNR News. A former Montgomery General Hospital pharmacist has been accused of trading prescription drugs for sex. 43-year-old Robert Lee Holtman of Oak Hill is also accused of distributing drugs without authorization in the hospital's pharmacy. Holtman was indicted yesterday by a federal grand jury on two counts of unlawful distribution of a controlled substance and one count of conspiracy to distribute controlled substances. The alleged crimes involved a painkiller and an anti-anxiety drug and occurred between the fall of 2004 and January of this year. A hearing examiner is recommending that an ethics complaint against former State Senator Mike Ross be dismissed. Catherine Dooley says Ross did not benefit directly from a deal in which he voted to spend state funds to promote a golf tournament on a course with financial ties to his company. Dooley's decision came earlier this month. The State Ethics Commission is expected to make a final decision by April. A former Workers' Compensation Commission claims manager who admitted accepting bribes has been given 2 years probation. Denise Miller of Spurlockville was also ordered yesterday to pay a $2,500 fine. Miller pleaded guilty in December to accepting bribes in 2002 to refer injured workers to Premium Choice Rehabilitation, which is a Pittsburgh rehabilitation service. According to the criminal complaint, the bribes were $50 to $75 per claim. Getting a ticket proved to be fatal for a Beckley man yesterday. Police say the elderly man died yesterday morning in Beckley Municipal Court where he was contesting a traffic citation. Police say he died of an apparent heart attack. His name was not released today because authorities were still attempting to contact his family as of this afternoon. That's the news. Now the forecast for this evening, partly cloudy, mid-30s. Tonight, partly cloudy, mid-20s. But then for Thursday, partly cloudy, noticeably warmer tomorrow. Temperatures in the upper 40s to the low 50s. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
Now through March 31st, you pick the down, you pick the payment at Ramey's Chevrolet Pontiac GMC. Just announced factory incentives mean you can drive a new Chevrolet truck for as low as $209 down, $209 a month. Buy new Pontiac cars from $177 down, $177 a month. And listen to this, through March 31st, Ramey's Chevrolet Pontiac GMC will double your down payment up to $1,000 for a total of $2,000 down on used cars and trucks. Let me repeat that. Ramey will
double your down payment up to $1,000 for a total of $2,000 down on used cars and trucks.
You pick your down. You pick your payment on new and double your down payment on used. But hurry, these offers end on March 31st. And Ramey Chevrolet Pontiac GMC of Princeton and Richlands and Ramey Chevrolet Tazewell are online at RameyCars.com. Do the deal.
Includes all factory incentives and rebates. Tax title and fees actually with approved credit. 05 Colorado payments based on 209 down 4.98% APR for 72 months. 05 Sunfire payments based on 177 down 4.98% APR for 72 months.
As Will Rogers once observed, this country has come to feel the same when Congress is in session as when the baby gets hold of a hammer. This Congress is especially terrifying because George W., Tom DeLay, and Bill Frist have decided that 2005 is payback time for their big business backers, and they've turned Washington into an assembly line for delivering corporate America's full wish list. It's business as usual, of course, for Washington to enact laws that enrich corporations, but this time the political leaders are going much further, rigging America's rules of fairness so that the balance of power in our society shifts overwhelmingly from we the people to they the corporations. CEOs have only dreamed about being handed these structural changes in the past, but now their campaign contributions and lobbying clout have altered the political dynamics, and their victories are coming hard and fast, with most of us totally unaware that we're getting hammered. The first blow came barely a month after Congress convened. A new law was rammed through, obliquely labeled tort reform. Behind that arcane title that means nothing to the vast majority of folks is a reform that can really whap you. If you're harmed or killed by corporate malfeasance, good luck getting any justice, for this law moves class action lawsuits against corporations out of your state court into corporate-friendly federal courts, restacking the scales of justice against you. Now comes a law for bankruptcy relief, another misnomer. It doesn't provide any relief for economically strapped people, but for credit card giants. If you're poor or middle income and find yourself overwhelmed with debt, this bill forces you into a vindictive form of bankruptcy that lets bankers seize your wages, car, or other essential assets you need to get back on your feet. This is Jim Hightower saying, many more blows are coming. To track and fight this corporate power grab, call Congress Watch, 202-588-7777.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
WWNR Beckley.
You can be right and be wrong, or be left and be right. Head on with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 21 minutes before 9 o'clock. We were chatting a little bit with Patty before the break, and let's go back. Hey, Patty, you still with us?
Sure, Bob.
Great. You were talking a little bit about the runaround you're getting with workers' comp. Do share a little bit more of the details, would you please?
Of the runaround or the injury?
Well, I mean, the injury itself.
Oh, well, this latest injury happened in October of last year, mm-hmm. 2004. My husband was lifting a timber out of the way, and he was working alone. And the actual timber that he was lifting out of the way was too large to use for what he was going to do, so that was why he was moving it. And he said, you know, in his left arm, he had all this sudden pain and down into his hand. And, of course, you know, he filled out an accident report. And it seems that when he goes to the doctor and tells the doctor, he said, well, he didn't think that it was coming from his hand and arm. He thinks it's coming from his neck. So he gets permission to get an MRI, and the MRI shows a herniated disc. Well, then immediately a cordia starts trying. They deny him to go to a neurosurgeon to get checked to see, you know, if he needs surgery or what kind of treatment. And immediately. They just will not approve it. And they also start at the same time trying to get him an appointment and get him in to see one of their so-called independent medical examiners.
Yeah, independent.
Who, you know, my husband had seen him before from a previous injury, and we know what he does. You're always better no matter what.
Oh, yeah.
And so that was their way of, you know, trying to get him back to work without, or off workers' comp, whichever, without letting him get treated properly. And his doctor told him that he really needs to see this specialist because if he was to get a hard lick in the head or possibly even a slip and a fall, could paralyze him from the neck down permanently.
Right.
So, you know, he can't work. But these other injuries, you know, now they're trying to bring those in to it, saying it was an old injury. But the thing of it is, there were MRIs done at that time, too, and there was no herniated disc. So, you know, they went from you're trying to add an injury to it's an old injury to, you know, just anything to tie you up so you
pre-existing condition, anything to keep it from being a work-related injury.
Right. So I like to say that they'll spend $10,000 to keep a working man from getting a dime.
Oh, you're right. And they
would.
Well, I mean, there have been instances, I'm not kidding, where coal companies have paid their lawyers thousands upon thousands of dollars to stop one prescription.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not an operation, not a doctor's visit, a prescription.
Well, see, when his benefits were cut, he couldn't get prescriptions either. And see, for some reason, the doctor, he won't write them, so our regular health insurance will pay for him. He says it has to be workers' comp because it's an injury. So, you know, he can't even get his pain medication now.
Well, you know, Patty, you bring up some interesting points. And if it was regular workers' comp, you know, the regular state program,
mm-hmm.
It's my understanding that the conventional wisdom is that you can't sue workers' comp in bad faith. But this is a third-party private insurer, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds to me like somebody needs to light the bad faith fire under him. Because,
well,
to hear your story, if that's not bad faith on the part of an insurance company, it kind of makes you wonder what in the world is.
Well, it seems to me it would be, although I'm not a lawyer and I don't know the law, and I guess, you know, it's
well,
whatever.
Well, I'm no lawyer either, but
we were told by an attorney that we couldn't sue them, Accordia.
Hmm. That's
I don't know. But what else has happened is, as of March the 1st, Peabody no longer has Accordia. They have someone called Frank Gates, who has an office in Charleston, but I looked the name up on the Internet, and it's something like Frank Gates Service Company or something, and it's out of Columbus, Ohio. So I don't know anything about them yet either, but it said no matter the date of your injury, as of March 1st, you wouldn't have Accordia, you would have them. But I'm like, well, that's good. We just changed horses in midstream, didn't we, Bob?
No, sure you did.
And I can say, well, they lost the paperwork. I don't know.
Dog ate it.
Yep. Pass that back. But, hey, make sure they bypass us with that back.
Oh, without
you
a doubt.
You know what? We don't want anything that's not rightfully ours, but it's rightfully ours, and we want it. And I'm not stopping until we get it.
Atta girl, Patty.
It's not right. But some of these injuries, and this will show you what a coal miner goes through.
Mm-hmm.
In the late 70s, my husband had a back injury from lifting heavy pipes, and I'm not sure because that was the first one, and we were really new at this. He didn't get a percentage or any award on that. And in 82, he had another back injury, and I know that usually they get part of the percentages back, and I know that he's had three back injuries in a row, but I know one of them, the doctor gave him 8%, and they took back 3 of it. But he has 5% on that one. And in 1990, he had another back injury, and he had another 5%. And in 92, he had, they called it neck and ribs, but actually he was hitting the top of the head. This was his worst injury. He was hitting the top of the head working alone again. And actually, this was a place they were pulling out of, so there was no phones for communication underground, no blackboards, nobody working there but him, just him. And they sent him there to get some, I'm not sure what, old equipment or something out. And something they'd left. And so when this fell and hit him in the head, it actually broke his helmet.
Oh, my heavens.
And he came to in the dark, total, you know, I mean, it's pitch total dark if you've ever been in a coal mine. And, I mean, you can't see your hand in front of your face, literally.
Right.
And his light was out. So he reached for his cord to his light and found it and pulled his hat to him and got his light back on. But, you know, then they want to know, well, how long were you unconscious? Well, like, I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, I mean.
I set the timer when the thing hit me in the head.
Uh-huh. And so, you know, they fought him on percentage on that, too. And he ended up with 8%. And also in 92, he was awarded actually 15% for black lung, but they told him he only had 10% because he smoked cigarettes.
Oh.
And in 98, he had a knee and a back injury. That was from a slip getting out of a piece of equipment, but he had also asked them to put some type of a step on so that you wouldn't be slipping in the mud and with the rubber boots and all.
Yeah, but that might have cost a nickel.
Well, they did that immediately after the injury.
Yeah.
But he got 9% on that. And then in 1999, he had another back injury. He got 4%. And with all that, still yet, he has never tried to get, you know, permanent total disability. And, you know, all he's asking for is what's rightfully his now.
Yeah,
and,
just this injury.
And now, you know, I'm reading in the newspaper that they want to go back all the way from 1993, and I believe that's like, what, 12 years?
Yeah.
And these people that's been disabled all this time, they want to review and see if they can cut them off.
Yeah, isn't that charming?
It's ridiculous. And I said, I don't understand why more people will not call their delegates and their legislature and their senators over at that Capitol under that covered dome.
Yeah.
I don't understand, because if everybody would do that, like one time during the coal truck issue, they got so many emails that their email system shut down twice.
Oh, I know.
Now,
I know.
They listened when that happened. And if you type their switchboards all day long giving messages, you know, I don't want you to do this. I want you to do this. Direct them. They're like two-year-olds.
Yeah.
They need to be changed often. And they also need to be told and disciplined. And, you know, they're just like babies. That's all I can say. Good comparison.
In many ways, you're right, Patty.
And I think that people need to realize that you are their boss, because you're paying their paycheck. You are a taxpayer.
Well, you know, and we're the sovereigns.
And I think that we have the right to be treated as citizens as would in any other place in the United States or in West Virginia. And it's time for people to stand up and ask for what is yours.
I think you're so right, Patty. I appreciate it. And keep me posted on how things develop, would you?
Oh, I will.
I sure hope Congressman Ray Hall and Senator Byrd can help you.
I do, too, and I just hope some of the citizens out there will call their legislators about this workers' comp, because you know what? It's not going to just be us and coal miners. It's going to be them next.
Sure. You know, just because you don't have to go underground or you don't have to wear a hard hat doesn't mean you can't get hurt at work.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you, Patty.
And thank you, Bob.
You have a great evening. Did you hear the list of the injuries? You go to work for someone, and you are literally trading them your time and chunks of your very life in exchange for some money so that you can, you know, feed your family, keep the lights on, keep the house warm, maybe cool in summer. And then when you ask the other side to live up to their side of the obligation, well, that's a problem. That's a problem. Now, I guess Patty's been told by a lawyer that they can't sue this insurance company. Do you hear the runaround she and her husband are getting? And they can't sue the insurance company. So, you know, keep that in mind, please. Make a call to some senators about this third-party bad faith business. That's what happens with an insurance company when you cannot hold their feet to the fire. they run you around and then torment you and ignore you and game you and rip you off, you better pay attention, because and don't play that little mind game with yourself where you say, well, you know, that's them and it'll never happen to me, because the forces of nature or the powers that be or whatever, as soon as you say never, you got a good chance of living to regret that, because it can happen to you. It can happen to you. And you can be the one who's getting ripped off by the insurance company. You can be the one who's being strung out, whose bills are going up, who worries day in and day out, you know, how you're going to continue to do that whole feed the family thing. And the insurance company does not care. You understand? There is no good neighbor. You're not in good hands, and they're not on your side. Figure it out, and the sooner you do, the better off you'll be. Back to the phones. Chris is with us. Hey, Chris, you're head on.
Hey, Bob.
What's up?
Let's talk about Choice Point.
Yeah, sure.
Alrighty. I sent this my piece to Greg Palast's website, and someone named Lenny from their website thanked me for sending it.
Oh, yeah, I know her. She's a very nice person.
Yeah. Choice Point, as some of your listeners probably know, I know you know, was the company used, private company used to purge all the black votes in Florida.
That's correct.
And yesterday, they hired Carol A. DeBattiste in the Bush administration. Just goes to show you that if you work for the Bush administration, don't worry about it. You've got a job waiting for you somewhere.
Yeah, somebody's just standing on the corner waiting to give you money.
Mm-hmm. And she's currently the deputy administrator of U.S. Transportation and Security Administration. And she's going to be the company's chief credentializing and compliance and privacy officer. She will report to the company's board of directors' privacy committee. Now, this is someone from the Bush administration that's going to report on privacy.
Right. This is the fox who gets the job of guarding the hen house.
Yeah. The biggest thing, and they have her credentials or whatever, and the biggest thing, she was a deputy U.S. attorney for the Southern District of Florida.
Oh, well, how nice.
Florida.
Voter purge. Yeah.
Election.
And do remember that, of course, Choice Point, just not too long back, got a beautiful contract from the Bush administration.
Oh, yeah.
To keep private dossiers on all American citizens, because the Bush administration is scared to death of the citizens.
Yeah. I rented through Netflix one of the DVDs in this collection called Democracy University. And in this one, you get to watch a speech by Greg Palast. You get to watch one by Scott Ritter. And Greg Palast talks about Choice Point for quite a bit. And he has the software that they use to purge the people, the black people from the voter list.
Right.
And it's amazing. They were purging people from the voting list in Florida for crimes committed in 2007.
Oh, and they purged people who had never, committed a crime. They purged Floridians for being Texans, because that's one of the other beautiful parts of the whole Florida 2000 fiasco. Choice Point used a list of Texans to purge the names of Floridians.
Yeah.
Now here's
the. This is Georgia, which is a what color state?
That would be red.
That would be red, and we already know they're in cahoots with them now because they've done it on two elections. And so now they've hired a person from the Bush cabinet, you know, the Bush team, rah-rah, for their, I mean, there's no stopping them.
Well, not until we do the whole pitchforks and torches thing.
Yeah, it would take getting some organized for that.
We've got a chance in about a year to take the Congress back, and I think America will be so disgusted if the Democrats will mount a half a campaign, we can have the Congress back in 2006.
Wouldn't that be incredible?
Yes, it would.
I was watching C-SPAN today for quite a while, and to hear the Republicans, I mean, it was double talk like you would not believe.
Yeah, like listening to somebody speak Martian.
Yeah, and a very good representative from Massachusetts, cannot remember, was going on about how they were gonna try and cut learning for special education, stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
And the Republican committee member came up and said, "No, we're not going to do that. We're going to do this." And then he came right back and said, "Have you read what you wrote? You know, they can say all he wants to in front of the camera, but what's written down on the piece of paper is not going to change."
Well, that's what's going to pass is what's written down on the paper.
Yeah.
I think about taking back the Congress, and one of the things I wonder about, you know, you've got a senator down there, Chris, Richard Shelby.
Yeah.
He started out a Democrat.
He sure did.
So I wonder. I'm just curious. You know, if at some point in time the Senate goes back into Democratic hands, I wonder if Richard Shelby will turn coat again.
You know, that wouldn't surprise me. Well, it's how more than likely it has to do with whichever way the lobbyist.
Who's writing the bigger checks?
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, you've got a four square idiot from Mobile down there, Jeff Sessions.
Well, I wrote him a really interesting letter yesterday.
I mean, that guy couldn't pour rainwater out of a boot with directions on the heel. He's kind of pitiful, really.
I addressed my letter about civil rights, so I know he'll read it, or somebody in his office will read it. And I wrote, you know, there's 300,000 people dead in Darfur. And these are really darker skinned people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've said all along, we're gonna have another genocide over there. And guess what? Turns out we're right.
Sure.
And the people in Iraq are not as quite dark skinned, so I guess they're good enough to save.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, we're only going to kill 100,000 of them.
So if we want to export democracy all over the world, why can't we export civil rights?
Kind of makes sense to me. Of course, I mean, you know the answer to the Darfur problem.
Yeah.
Put a barrel of oil in the middle of Darfur.
Oh, absolutely.
And George Bush will be there yesterday.
Darfur, Ivory Coast, all over there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've got, you know, like I've said before, the tsunami, that was terrible. It was 150,000 or so people dying. In the next 10 years, they're predicting in Africa that 90 million may die from AIDS. And let's weigh 90 million versus 150,000.
Yeah. And let's
like you said, you know, because the 90 million aren't on TV.
They're not on TV and out of sight and out of mind.
All right.
God, it's heartbreaking. Chris, we got to roll.
Take care, Bob.
Thanks, man. All right. Time for a break. A little something from ABC News, which, like I said, I'm liking. I'm liking ABC. So the phone number is 252-6200. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-9967. If you've got something you want to get out from under the saddle, the burr, the bee out from your bonnet, that's how you do it. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Over 50 years of broadcasting history.
You can depend on us.
News Talk 620, WWNR, Beckley. It's 9 o'clock.
Exciting things are happening at the library. Libraries in 16 counties are teaming up to offer more services, books, and information than ever before. And you can be a part of it. Just stop by your local library for a brand new card and ask about the new Mountain Library Network. Many libraries One car does it all.
News Talk 620 WWNR, keeping you informed with Southern West Virginia's most accurate and dependable forecast.
Here is your forecast from the Weather Channel. Mainly overcast as we look at our part of West Virginia through tonight. 27 the low. We'll rebound to a pleasant 42 tomorrow. Look for more clouds and sunshine as we get through St. Patrick's Day. Overnight, 29 into early Friday. That'll become 51 with showers off and on throughout the day. And look for this wet period to persist into the weekend. Weekend highs in the upper 40s and low 50s.
WWNR Beckley.
Shining a liberal light in the conservative darkness. Bob Kincaid, head on.
Welcome back. 6 minutes after 9 o'clock. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Little programming note for you. Due to circumstances beyond my control. Does that work? Does that work for everybody? Due to circumstances beyond my control or John Kepi's control, the stream will be going down. The internet stream will be going down at about a quarter after. I apologize. I sincerely apologize. It ain't my fault, but I apologize. I didn't make this decision, and, well, frankly, if it was up to me, I wouldn't do it, but apparently we have to stream the Mountain State University basketball game that's running on our sister station, WTNJ, which has a much broader broadcast radius at night than we do here. Go figure. I don't explain the mind that conceived it. It ain't me. So that's that. But at any rate, if you've got something to share, streaming or not, the phone number is 252-6200. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-9967. Who am I kidding? I'm disgusted. Just disgusted. But that's me. Look, a couple of other things that I wanted to make sure we make sure that we hit this evening. Kind of like to get your sense on this, a little bit of input. I heard Carl Mack's news on the way in this afternoon. Yeah, I mean, my radio stays on 620. Fortunately for me, I'm not usually driving around during, like, rush or anything like that, so that's okay. And I'm just reading the straight copy from Carl Mack's news desk. Officials with the West Virginia Turnpike want the legislature to provide a special fee for allowing coal trucks on the turnpike. So apparently, it's not enough that they're killing people on little two-lane roads. They need to kill them on the turnpike, too. Remember back many, many, many years ago when the turnpike was referred to as the number one blood highway in America? Remember that? I guess we lost that status. But that's not to suggest that apparently somebody wants to reclaim it. The Senate is considering a proposal that would grant an exemption from the federally mandated weight limit of 80,000 pounds on the portion of the turnpike from Chelan to Marmette. And they're trying to give some relief to people in Chesapeake who say that coal trucks barreling through their town bring clouds of dust and mud along with them. I understand the sentiment behind this. But again, the answer is not to put the coal trucks on the interstate to destroy the interstate because the traffic will you know what it'll do. You know what, you've probably got a pretty good idea of what running a 160,000 pound truck will do to the road surface and the roadbed there on the turnpike. And here's the fun part. They'd get to do it for free. Because while there's a move that says, Turnpike Manager Greg Barr, he says he doesn't object to the waiver, but he wants some compensation. There's no toll booth there. So in order to appease, well, let's not use the word appease. I have all the sympathy in the world for those folks down at Chesapeake. I have sympathy for anybody who has to have those roaring monstrosities running past their homes. But the answer is not to give further leeway to these monsters. The answer is to control them. Do we remember how this all developed? Of course we do. They were only supposed to be hauling 80,000 pounds, but the coal company said, oh, we'll go broke if we can't destroy your roads and kill your people and stuff and dump dust and great big hunks of coal, you know, as big as basketballs fly off these things sometimes. I nearly got blinded by one of these jerks the other day. And this is not the answer. This is not, no. Let's bring them back into control. Let's bring them back under control. And you know what? For the truck drivers, here's a start. If the coal truck drivers exercised a little bit of gumption and solidarity, they could probably get it set up where they're not being paid by the tons they haul, but by the hours of their lives that they trade in return for money. Again, how many decades ago did we stop paying coal miners by the ton? And yet we're still treating the truck drivers the same way. I say the truck drivers need to be fairly compensated at an hourly rate. And frankly, it's just like listening to an insurance company complain. I simply do not believe the coal companies when they say, oh, well, yeah, we'll have to... And you know, you've heard them say it a million times, oh, we'll have to pack up and leave West Virginia because we can't... You know, we can't do business unless we get to crush oncoming vehicles with our monster overloaded coal trucks. Ah, I don't believe them. They're liars. The truth's not in them. They've been caught lying so many times it's not even funny. You know, what did they say when the severance tax was imposed? Not this latest little bump, but we won't be able to dig coal in West Virginia if we have to pay tax on it. Funny. I think we're still mining, aren't we? Yeah, they were lying. I don't... Oh, yeah, and of course, who else is involved with this? Who else would like to appease the coal companies? Why, yes, look at 2nd District Congresswoman Shelley Moore. Genetically predisposed to do anything a coal company wants. How nice for her. You know, for my part, I hope the residents of Chesapeake would do the same thing that our friends the Sylvester Dustbusters did. Sue the coal company. Make them behave in a responsible manner. How hard is that to figure out? Now, this is the fun part. Turnpike manager Greg Barr can't officially oppose the proposals. He is muted. He is silenced. He cannot speak up for the turnpike that he manages. So he has to sit idly by while we let coal trucks up onto the internet.